Reading through these dialogues between Job and his friends, you soon realise that they're not dialogues anymore. And they are, in one sense, I think, a parade example of how not to behave with each other. They're really an example of dialogue gone wrong, of relationship gone wrong. I'd think just for a moment why that happened. The friends start off with this assumption that if you're righteous, you're going to get blessed, and if you sin, then you get sudden dramatic cursings coming into your life. And so they start the whole discussion, so-called, with Job on the assumption that we know that you have sinned. You must have sinned. What you need to do is to fess up and admit it. And they were wrong, because that man was perfect, Job 1 verse 1, in God's opinion. And the sufferings were actually for their benefit in the end, I think, rather than Job's. So how does the whole relationship between Job and his friends go wrong? Well, I think part of it is that they do not engage with what he says. Reading and rereading these so-called dialogues, I must say that Job engages with what the friends have said, but they just attack him in terms of vague generalities, and they might pick up an odd word he uses and twist it against him, but they don't actually engage with his argument. Take Job 21. He begins by saying, "Listen diligently to my speech." He says it twice. Verse 3 of Job 21, "I will speak, and after I've spoken, mock me." He keeps saying, "Please listen to me," because they were not engaging with his actual arguments. They were just picking a word here and there and getting all worked up and excited about it, because they were so sure that they had him sorted out. They were not interested in his argument. So in Job 21, he does actually engage with what they have said. His speech in Job 21 is a specific answer to all that Zophar has just said in Job 20. Zophar has been saying that, well, the wicked are just cut down in this life when they sin, and he's saying, no, that is not the case. In fact, you said that, but just look at life. The wicked prosper, and their children often don't suffer the sins of their parents, but actually they rather profit from them. You know, dad goes and nicks a load of land and deceives the neighbour out of his property, and then dad dies and the kids get the property and hey-ho. And it's this lack of engagement with each other which is a real problem in the inability of people to maintain relationships and to understand each other. If you're in dialogue with somebody, I mean, listen to what they're saying. Don't just cherry-pick a few phrases that irritate you, but listen and engage with what they have said. I'm sure we've all had discussions with folks who believe differently to ourselves. For example, you take the issue of, is Jesus God? Well, starts off with the Trinitarian, we'll quote John 1, there you are, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and etc. Therefore, Jesus is God. Yeah. The non-Trinitarian will say, no, John 14, 28, my Father is greater than I. And it's a Trinitarian's turn. And he says, John 10, 30, I and my Father are one. And the non-Trinitarian then says, on the cross, Jesus said, my God, why have you forsaken me? At the end of the so-called conversation, both sides are more and more convinced that I am right, because they have not sought to engage with what the other has said. And so the whole exercise has actually been for each side to have their own ego, as it were, stroked, and for their own self-justification. The problem of having that attitude is that you are very likely to pick the odd word here and there and put it in a totally different context, because your pre-existing narrative about the person requires you to do that. Classic example is in Job 21, verse 15, where Job says about the wicked, he's saying, now look, the wicked do prosper, because there's wicked people who say, what is the Almighty that we should serve him, and what profit should we have if we pray to him? And those people get blessed. And Elihu in Job 35, verse 3, misquotes those words as if Job has said that about himself. He says, Job has said, what is the Almighty that we should serve him? And what profit should we have if we pray to him? No, Job didn't say that about himself. He was saying that about the wicked. And you could understand Elihu as merely reiterating the positions of the friends. That's, I think, how I see Elihu in the book of Job. I think his function, within the context of it being a dialogue for illiterate people who were hearing it being spoken rather than reading it, his function is, I think, to summarise the position of the friends. I think that is his function. And I think that resolves some of the question about whether Elihu is a good guy or a bad guy. Maybe he has no other role than to just summarise the situation, to summarise the arguments. Because, as I say, he in this case, he misquotes Job. Absolutely. So I think that this misquoting of each other is what happens when you are listening to somebody through the prism of your own pre-existing narrative and conclusion about that person. And so to understand each other, there has got to be a genuine engagement with each other's position. There has got to be a hearing and a listening to each other. And particularly a recognition that your pre-existing religious ideas, your pre-existing sense about things, as it were, has condemned the person or justified the person right at the start of the conversation. And whatever they say actually doesn't matter. If you are decided that they're a good guy and you're going to justify them, well, so you will, whatever they say. If you decide the opposite, this person is a bad person and I do not like them, and I do not like their position, well, you're going to hear all that they say in that context. There's just a little observation, as I say, as we read through Job, and you see really how the whole thing peters out. You could argue that the structure of the speeches really requires each of the three friends to give a series of speeches, but it's unbalanced at the end, as if we're expecting them to come back still and complete their set number of speeches, but that doesn't happen. And I think it's in order, just not because, you know, something dropped out of the text, I wouldn't say. I would say it's there because we're all going to notice that, especially if it was a dramatic play or presentation or even a play for voices. Like, oh, where's the last speech of whoever, you know, and it's not there. And you notice that. And it gives you the impression, the correct impression, that the dialogue has petered out, that really there is nothing more to be said. It is pointless continuing it because it's pointless, because they have not engaged with each other and their pre-existing ideas have stayed as they were. The one who does develop throughout the dialogues is Job. And God helps him in his final summing up, I think, to build on where he's come from, because he has developed. And why has Job developed as his argument goes on, from lamenting himself to then thinking, well, yeah, look, there has to be justice with God, and apparently how I'm being treated is unjust. And then he thinks, well, yeah, but I am a sinner, but then the wicked prosper. So there must be, finally, a day of judgment. So he's led to the doctrine, if you like, of a day of judgment by his own conclusions, by his own reasoning through the terribly wrong reasoning of the friends. And that is how it can be, even if we're in very messy personal relationships with people who just will not dialogue, will not sensibly dialogue, will not really engage with us. Okay, fair enough. But at the end of the day, at the very end of the day, you are the one who will grow through it all if you engage with them and if you engage with the idea that maybe my starting narrative was wrong and that I have something to learn.